have a focus. If the focus is going to be flipping houses, then be all in on flipping houses. And, you know, if you want to get 6 or 8 months out and pivot, that's fine. But I find a lot of new investors, and I've been guilty of this myself, is that 1 week we're into flipping houses, then we're into wholesaling, then we're into notes, then we're into multifamilies, then we're into, you can think of it, Airbnbs, all the way down to point. And sounds great, but then you're just a master of nothing.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today, but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me today is Jason Yerusi. Jason, how are you doing?
Doing great. Hey, Todd.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show and taking time out of your day. Let's get started.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Jason, you have been in real estate business for quite some time. I'll let you give the listeners a background about yourself, but you're doing multifamily now. You guys do some house lifting, some flipping, all that kind of stuff. So why don't you tell our listeners more about what you got going on, what you're up to today?
Sure. Quick run through. So been in real estate since about 2014. Come from a family construction business. We're five generations of heavy construction with moving and lifting structures. Most of it now, as we're on the East Coast, is for flooding from Hurricane Sandy, lifting houses to make them FEMA compliant. Throughout that, we've opened a couple different businesses along the way, restaurants, a brewery, and we just kept getting back that real estate was the direction we wanted to go. And so we actually started with a storm damaged home back in 2014, raised it, added more square footage to it, made it FEMA compliant, and sold that off. And the flipping started leading to us buying some buy and holds, buying them out of state. And we were buying some duplexes out in Indiana, and just the model was great and we were just getting so much cash flow, and it just dawned that going bigger was going to allow us so many more opportunities and just be able to delve a lot more into the economies of scale. And that's when we really jumped in all in to buying large multifamily properties.
Cool. When did you buy your first duplex?
That was 2016. Into 2015 was the first duplex there. And it was actually, we had some boots on the ground out there and they were doing the same thing. And they were doing it with single family homes. And for every reason, we just brought a duplex and brought a couple of them. You know, you're buying them for pennies out there in Indianapolis and rehabbing them, getting them rented. And they were cash flowing phenomenally. You're into them for $30,000-$40,000, wow, making $1,300-$1,400 a month. And you can just see that all cash in there. You know, you got about 30% return a year on those bad boys.
Wow.
And that was pretty fun, but just from being afar setting up a team, it was more of a nuisance to try and scale that or even deal with this management company on a two family. So sold those off, rolled that cash right into a 94 unit that we picked up a little over a year ago.
Cool, cool. Well, we'll get to that 94 in just a little bit. I want to actually go back and talk about your house lifting. Sure. And because that's a unique business. We don't lift houses in Minnesota. we don't have that need. I guess sometimes we do lift them, but it's not for the same reason.
You actually have them out there. You actually have lifters in Minnesota, Wisconsin.
We do. More of our lifting, though, is usually not for flood reasons. It's somebody wants to lift a house, maybe move it, or they just want to lift it because the older houses were built oftentimes with foundations. Foundations that are crumbling, that's another reason, but foundations that just weren't very high above the grade level. Correct. And so people want to raise them to get them up, throw a couple courses a block and then put them back down. But for your case, you guys are lifting them for FEMA compliance. Is that what you said?
Majority of them now. I mean, you get back, we had before Hurricane Sandy, back 2 years before that, we had Hurricane Irene. They both really affected different parts of the state. One, Irene hit more of the towns that were off of rivers, and then Sandy hit more of the towns that were on the coastline. And that really spawned most of the flooding work. We had done it previously before then, but let's say 95% of the work pre-Hurricane Irene 2010 was not storm related. And now after the hurricanes, 95% of the work is storm related. Wow. And what's happened is FEMA's come in and basically the National Flood Insurance Program almost bankrupted themselves because they were giving all these discounts for people to carry flood insurance. And with all these recent storms that have happened here in New Jersey and Texas and Florida and the middle of the country out in Denver, they've just gotten wiped out having to pay out all these claims. So they're maxing out people's coverages to getting back to what the real premium is over the course of the next 4 to 8 years. So townships are pushing homeowners that they will not give them a CO, a certificate of occupancy, in a lot of these towns if you buy a home without making it to code and basically meeting town ordinance and also becoming FEMA compliant, with, in most part, includes raising the home. And what that will include is that you have an elevation at your base flood elevation.
Yeah.
And within that, FEMA wants you to raise, it depends on the zone, but on a high level, FEMA wants you to raise 1 foot over that. And in some towns, that flood elevation may be 2 feet off the ground. And in some towns, that may be 12, 13 feet off the ground. Wow. And, and most of it in the middle with about 6 to 8 feet off the ground. And what you do is that we'll raise the home, say 6 or 8 feet off the ground. You'll build a foundation underneath, and you will no longer have a basement or a crawl space. The ground will actually have to be filled in to grade level, with the anticipation that when water comes into the house, it won't have anywhere to rest below grade. It will just come in the house and go out. And within the foundation, you have to put in vents, which are called flood vents. And wow. Those flood vents are basically every 200 square feet within the home on a high level. You'll put a vent in with that. It allows what it's hoping for is that in the future we have a heavy storm, it's not going to collapse the foundation wall with all the water pressure, and it's going to allow water to come into the house. And just as quickly as it comes in, the vent swings both ways and will allow water to go right outside of the house. So most of these houses can go up and block foundations. There's a few different zones which go on velocity of how impending a storm will be and how bad a storm will be. So there's certain levels where there's actually a higher level called a V zone, where you'll have to build on an open foundation that may be a pile or a pier foundation. If you've been to New Orleans, or you think about, down in Florida, you see a lot of homes that are built up in piles or concrete piers. That's sort of the homes here. But what it allows is you can't put any livable storage or livable areas down below the base flood elevation. So if you lift the home 8 feet off the ground, everything beneath it basically either has to be parking or storage. Hmm. So you can't build a garage under there.
You could build a garage.
can build a garage. That's pretty paramount. As if we lift it 6 feet, most of the time people will go the additional 2 feet, so you get a full garage underneath. Garage. Yeah. And that helps with a lot of parking in some of the towns that are a little bit tighter, sure, where we don't have a lot of parking. You can now park under your house where your car is not going to be insurable anyway with the flood. And then you could put storage behind that. So you'll have to bring a lot of the cost comes into lifting the house, replacing the entire foundation or using the existing foundation. Now moving all of your mechanicals upstairs, because they also have to be above that base flood elevation as well.
Hmm. And then since you got these vents, do you have to protect the underside of the joists now? So, you know,
depends on mice the zone. Yeah. So if you're in of course you put a garage in, you have to fireproof it. So put sure. fire rated sheetrock. But for any parts of the storage, you don't necessarily have to, cause you're going to be above that area, but for insulation reasons, that you're also, we get cold weather here. So if you're having all of your mechanicals running through your floor system, you want to sheetrock underneath and insulate it, so your mechanicals now are exposed to all that cold weather and you don't want your mechanicals freezing. Now you have such a long run coming out of the ground up into the house.
And then do they hang mechanicals? You know, your furnace is hung above the flood level, or does that just
generally go? Because the houses are getting built a foot or two feet above it. So FEMA makes you do a foot, and then a lot of the towns have put in an additional foot or 2 feet above it. So if sure. I have to raise it 6 feet off the ground, the FEMA wants an additional 1 foot, and then now the town may want an additional 2 or 3 feet, making the sure. house 8 or 9 feet. So that wouldn't leave room for the furnace to be above it. So it either gets moved upstairs into a closet, possibly everything gets moved upstairs into the attic. You may have room where, as long as it doesn't incur a variance, you can build a utility room off the back of the house, but everything would get elevated, including your AC units would get built up on the platform, you know, at the elevation of the house, 8-10 feet off the ground.
So then handicapped people are just kind of hosed out of this whole thing?
So
that's a challenge, yeah. Right?
You know what happens is, that's a great point. A lot of elderly people, of course, is hard for them. Now you got, you know, 14 stairs, 14 treads going up to the house. There is grants that allow the elevators to get put into these homes. Hmm. So there's a lot of homes that have elevators that go into them, and the grants actually allowed to get a discount on putting an elevator into a house.
Okay.
So that's what happened, is you do get points for elevators, but that's one thing for people. You know, you figure if this is your home forever and you're 50 and you're going to live there forever. Now, you know, you may be fine now, but you got to think about it 10, 20 years from now going up, 10 feet of stairs every day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of changes. And expense, you know, who bears this expense?
A lot of different people. So there's grants that come out after a lot of storms, generally 12 to 18 months after, and they're primarily after primary homeowners, because they're the people that are most important to get back in their house first, because they're the ones that are affected most. Secondary homeowners, there's flood insurance that can come out, and generally you can get ICC money, which gives you about $30,000 that can help them with some cost, but the grants can give up to $150,000 to $250,000. Thousand to cover this work. There's a lot of different stipulations. They're very difficult to work with, and they take a long time to come through, and it's not a perfect process, and it changes continually. But that's some of the way that basically the primary homeowners can be in there. There are some renter programs that come out to help landlords be able to do this for some of their rental properties. There is SBA loans that homeowners are allowed to get that are actually low interest loans that they can get. And then it just comes down to, unfortunately, cash and having just other maybe 203K loans that homeowners can get.
Yeah.
The funny thing that's out there is that there's actually millions of dollars that are available every year for you to remediate for flooding purposes, and with the anticipation that it costs a lot more to get flooded than have to fix it than it does in the front end of actually just getting towns compliant. And towns, they don't really put this information out there, so a lot of people don't know about this. And the towns that do, they're able to write a grant for their township and get a lot of the funding that can come down the pipeline. So there's actually a couple of towns in North Jersey that we're working on now that have about 1,200 homes that will be lifted through a grant program with the the inaugural number of houses being 48 on the first run. And what that does is gives a grant that will cover either 70% of the cost of the work up to 100% of cost of the work. But there are programs out there, but it takes the town jumping in and doing this, and also homeowners saying, you know what, I want to do this work because I don't want to ever get flooded. And with, you know, what happens a lot is that people just say, you know, I'll take that risk until it happens. And then when it happens, unfortunately, then they chase it. And that's, it's just a hard way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of expense and headache too. I mean, you gotta, lifting a house isn't just, you know, coming in and putting a house up and boom, you get, I mean, you're changing your plumbing, you're changing a lot of stuff in a lot of cases. So
absolutely. And you find that over the years, you know, we always say that no one ever builds a house with the intention to lift it, right? So when they put on additions or they do different things, they just frame it as is where the house is. But when you lift these houses, you have all kinds of different problems that exist from the structure, just how it's built, that also have to be basically attended to. And when you're putting the house up, just to make it compliant.
One more question about the house lifting, because this is super fascinating to me. What about apartment buildings? How do you lift them? What do you do with a big apartment complex?
It's just the same process as builder, as bigger. And so you can think about it, just an apartment building would just, if it's a crawl space or a basement, we'll lift it under the floor system, take it up and put a new basement in. If it's on a slab, which most of the areas in the North Jersey, the slabs are not conducive to lift. They're basically a 4-inch, 6-inch slab with not rebar enforced. So what we do is we actually lift them using the walls of the structure, the wood frame walls, lift them up into the air, basically off our lifting steel, and then underneath a floor system, a new floor system is built out of wood, and then a new foundation is built underneath. When you're in places so like
slab plate stays in place, and you have to cut the bolts.
Correct.
Then yeah, we'll lift.
cut nails, take it up, and generally the slabs they're not conducive to even carry the weight of the new structure up in the air. So when we lift it up, those slabs
are
moved, put in completely new and in. But what that takes is that the whole first story of the apartment complex has to be gutted. And there's a lot of homes like this too. When you lift the slab, gut 4 feet up of the house, lift it off the walls and put it all back together. So good news, when you flood, generally you're taking off 4 feet of sheetrock anyway, so you're gutted, so it's already done. But if people put their house back together, you'll put your house back together just to undo it again to do this lift.
Wow. That's intense business.
It's every day is an adventure.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I'm assuming that business has grown now with all these storms. Is that a big part of what you do and on a day-to-day basis, or are you focused more on the multifamily stuff?
It's 90% of my day is the heavy construction business. I have a whole office here, and I run the entire office side of the business. My father and brother run the field side of it.
Okay.
So I'm all about logistics, scheduling, permitting, contracting, everything that goes in a part of getting us to the job sites. And they're the ones that take the job sites from start to finish. And then I'm the one who wraps the job.
Okay. All right, let's shift now to this 94 unit. I want to talk about that, and then I want to kind of go back and we'll talk about both your businesses and how you're juggling those, and then how you're having and finding success in those. So let's talk about this 94 unit building. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how you found it, and why did you decide to buy it?
Sure, absolutely. So just when we knew we were all in on apartments, we started learning everything we could basically find on buying large multifamilies. And you find it's a pretty small community, and there's a lot of guys doing it different ways, whether they're buying it, managing themselves, syndicating the deal, or taking one combination of the two. Yeah. And so what we decided is that here in New Jersey, of course, price points versus rent is not the most attractive thing. And it's very costly if we wanted to buy something of scale. So we started looking at markets out of state. honed in on a few markets, one in Texas, one in Carolina and Kentucky, and just started putting our focus there. And the reason we chose those markets were simply we were looking for moderate population growth, 2 or 3% in these cities. We were looking for jobs and job growth, nominal job growth and job diversity. Yeah. And then lastly, where we had someone we knew, even if they weren't real estate related, but we had some kind of boots in the ground that could point us in the direction of what part of town we were in. And after a lot of digging, we found that Louisville, Kentucky was really where we were going to chime in and put all of our focus. And that's worked out very well for us. We like a couple parts of the city that are very blue collar, very working class areas. There's a lot of job drivers there, FedEx, UPS, Aetna just brought Humana. You have Churchill Downs, you have Amazon right over the water right there. You have GE there as well. So there's jobs all over the place. It's a growing area, and there's tons of apartment complexes that are within the niche that we're looking at. BC assets, 75 to 150 units built 1970s to 1980s. That was pretty much the high level that we jumped in for. And the way we found the 94 unit is really just talking to everybody we could talk to and vetting out brokers, other investors there, and property managers. And we found a property management company that we really liked, and their model worked with what we were looking for. We were looking for someone who had real-time data. We could have access to it 24/7 every day of the week, managed a large number of rental units, managed, you know, between 4,000 or 5,000, dealt heavily in this B and C class arena. So they were very familiar with it and had in-house construction. So that was everything that fit the need with this company. And when we started talking to them, we started sourcing out a number of different properties, and this property came about. We put an offer in, and our offer was based on actuals and was about $1 million under what the ask was. And they came back just at their asking price. And we just said, you know, we're just too far apart. Thank you very much. And let it roll from there. And so offered on a number of different complexes over the next 6 or 7 months. And we found that it was still out there, and it wasn't listed anymore. It was just, but we knew that the owners still wanted to sell. So we basically raised our price only $50,000 and, went back to them and just said, hey, listen, I know this is still out there. We're still interested. We can come up a little bit. And at that point they had cut their ass down $600,000, and we knew we were in business. And for the next couple months, we were able to negotiate back and forth just to the end where what sealed the deal. We came up another $100,000, and we paid our broker's commission, which was around $40,000. And for us, it was great. We actually got it at the lowest price per unit in that submarket in the last, I think, 6 years. A ton of upside in rents, and also on the way it was being managed. It was five different buildings, with one building making up 50 units and the others were split up between 12 and six, couple 12s and a 16. And it really has been a great property for us, to sink our teeth in and really go after. And it's been performing really well.
So have you guys completed all the value add to it that you planned on doing, or are you still in that process?
No, we went in there guns blazing, and we thought about the process. Do we just slowly roll into it and not push the curve? But we had 6 and 12 month Linda repairs that were required. And then we had some CapEx electives that of just items that we had rolled into the loan for a CapEx budget. So we basically, we did about 26 units and all the 6 and 12 month repairs we turned in about 5 months and had it all knocked out. Wow. And just slammed it out. We've been able to push rents up to a good portion. There was anywhere between $75 to $100 off on the rents from where the market is, and we've been pushing up to about $50 from where we were. Just to, with doing all that turnover, doing all those repairs, we wanted to do moderate price increases for tenants that have been good paying tenants, and then for some of these tenants that have been issues over the years, and we just basically took them straight to market and gave them the option as their lease renewed. And sure, that's been working out fairly well for us. Changed over two of the smaller buildings have boilers, changed them over. We put in application fees, put in pet fees, put in fees that were basically happening. There's 900 units within this area. All the other apartment complexes were had these fees in, and our complex was one of the only ones that was not taking advantage of some of the fees that everybody else was expecting. Yeah. We have two laundry rooms. One was down, so we put both laundry rooms back up, got a laundry contract on there, and that actually gave us some more revenue. Jumped down. We had two basements that were huge, put some storage units in there. We have 12 storage units in there that we've been renting out and has given us some additional income. Repaired parking lots, and most of it really was some minor concrete repairs, railings, updating some of the apartments where you still had shag carpet from the 70s and some of that fun stuff in there. And it's really paid off, and the property looks beautiful.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. How to talk to us about managing then from out of state. You've got this management company. What kind of things do you have to do to make sure things are going well?
Set expectations day one. And that's what you have to do is, so if you don't give them guidance on what you want, then you can't be upset when they just give you what they're going to give you. So we told them how we wanted to operate. We still have a weekly call. It actually happened this morning, on Thursdays at 9 a.m., which basically goes over collections, goes over move-ins, moves out, goes over, of course, delinquencies, goes over any pending issues that may be outstanding. We had a couple more frequent calls when we were the first 5 months. We had a lot of moving parts doing all those repairs and all those turns. But now we're down to basically a weekly call. And prior to the weekly call, every week we get a whole list of about 12 to 14 pages that go over any open repairs, any units that may have a turn quote on them, anything from a point of all of our collections, where we stand, our vacancies, and then anything else that we may need to know about. And within that, what we did put in there is when we have turns happen, we gave them items that we definitely want to happen and items that we don't want to happen. So fans, it seems like the fans always break an apartment unit. So we told them we don't want fans anymore, just put up a light. And that would be just one example of something where don't come to us with a fan, we don't want it, and just put up a light. And then also on for appliances, depends on age of appliances, whether or not we're going to replace it or not.
Yep. Yeah. So the weekly call, that I think is really important for anybody who's hiring a third party manager, is just to consistently be talking with them. Because I hear it all the time. Everybody talks about how third party management is very difficult to deal with, and maybe they are. But if you're not staying on top of them, I think that's one of the biggest reasons, is if you're not communicating with them, how do they know what to do? And then do they think you really care too? So yeah. I think that's great.
It's for you vetting them first, right? If you're just going to go in there and hire a first guy, then it's just like anything, you know? Yeah. So I haven't found it that difficult, but it's basically, here's what we want, and they do it or they don't. And that's how we can gauge what we're getting.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. So let's kind of wrap these two businesses together. You can separate them however you want with some of the questions I'm going to ask. But
sure.
What advice would you give us about operating a business successfully?
There's a lot of learning curves, and operating a business successfully comes down to setting up what you're good at and filling in the gaps with strong people behind us. So I have a couple people in my office that are able to help on both sides of the business, and they are crucially important for all the back end items. And that comes down to anything from as simple as just, you know, filing LLC documents or getting out paperwork the lender needs. We're actually refinancing the 94 unit right now into a perm loan. And of course, you have 1,000 questions that are coming across the board. If I had to run and chase documents all day long, it would take up all my time. So you have to find what's the items that are the important items and help fill in people that can help with all the urgent items that are going to pop up daily.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, it's so easy. And I struggle with that myself. It's so easy to try to do everything.
It's not easy. And still, it's the same thing. I'm like, well, I could do this in 3 seconds. The other person is going to take a little bit longer, so I'll just do it. And then you realize that you're spending, you know, your hour on that stupid 3 second task. Now you're into wherever you want to go.
Give us one of your biggest mistakes that you've made, and how did you learn from it?
You know, I actually On our one of our flips that we lifted, I actually missed the way the frame was in our house. We had like we had something. It was probably the busiest we'd ever been. We had like 60 or 70 lifts going on at the same time, and I actually missed the framing that it was balloon framed, being the old style framing where the walls were coming down the foundation and the floor basically was floating. So we put in piles to the point where when we drove the piles, I drove it as if it was a Western style house where it was built conventional framing, and they were 2 inches off the wall, and that 2 inches off the wall made my walls were not sitting on anything with my bands. So it caused me just a good amount of reframing that happened underneath. It didn't kill the project. We still made some good money, but it was just a headache that was easily avoidable if I wasn't running 1,000 projects at the same time and just glancing over things and just said yes.
Yeah. So just not slowing down and paying attention to
the detail. There is nothing more important to building than paying attention to getting out of the ground.
Yeah.
If you can't get out of the ground wrong, or if you do come out of the ground wrong, everything else in the project is a disaster.
Yeah.
So nothing is more important than getting out of the ground.
Cool. What's one success story, one of your, you know, something that you're proud of?
We actually just moved a 6-unit townhome building in South Jersey, and they were moving it off the highway because the highway, it was their show units, and it was now had been rezoned commercial, and they're putting in a supermarket or a couple other things, and we moved it 2,000 feet to the back of the area where a bunch of the other townhomes are that they're going to now put it online and sell the townhomes. And they were built in 2006, and it weighed 550 ton. So if people can imagine, it's 2,000 pounds per ton. And my family moved it about a half mile all the way in the back. And it was right in the midst of winter here, where it was a very difficult project. You can imagine all the timing and all the patterns that go, because we had to spin it 140 degrees and be basically dead on to the spin to basically turn it and get it across the road. And we had one road that we actually had to move it. We had a 24-hour timeline to get it to the road. They filled in the road, made a bridge across the road, and for us to get across that road so that road could open back up. So there was really
no... Yeah. that sounds pretty interesting. I can't even like imagine.
Yeah, we'll actually have a video out. We had a guy out there film the video, so I'll share the video when it comes live.
That's really cool. Yeah, if you share that, it'd be fun to put on our show notes too.
Absolutely.
That's okay. That'd be cool. So what's somebody, you know, who's trying to get to that level, that next level, trying to buy a 94 unit or trying to flip a bunch of houses, you know, what does it take to get there? Give me like maybe 3 keys to success of getting there.
You know, as someone actually was at our meetup speaking the other night, we started a multifamily meetup, and he was talking about this, is that, you know, analysis paralysis, right? You just have to take action. You're going to make mistakes. And the key there is make the mistake, but then learn from the mistake. Don't make the mistake again. Right. And you can learn as much as you want, but you're never going to know everything. And that's part of the mystery and part of the excitement. So you have to go out there and take action. You can read a million books, but ideally, if you're not using what's in the books, then it's pointless for you to really just be reading all these books. And then have a focus. If the focus is going to be flipping houses, then be all in on flipping houses. And, you know, if you want to get 6 or 8 months out and pivot, that's fine. But I find a lot of new investors, and I've been guilty of this myself, is that 1 week we're into flipping houses, then we're into wholesaling, then we're into notes, then we're into multifamilies, then we're into, you can think of it, Airbnbs, all the way down to point. And sounds great, but then you're just a master of nothing.
Yeah. One more.
One more. I would say networking is absolutely the biggest thing you can do. It's hard, especially, I'm not the biggest person to go out there and be jumping at what we're doing, telling everybody what we're doing, but you have to get out there to talk to people. It helps you. give away as much information as you find, because you'll find just 10 times more information will come back to you. But get out there and network with everybody you can out there. You will be amazed at what people are doing, and you will learn a ton, and you'll probably save yourself tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, by just talking to people about what they're doing out there, and probably have some huge victories in the mix too about finding some properties, or how they're finding properties, or some aha moments.
Cool. Yeah. I love the focus part. It makes me laugh every time I think about it. Is these people in this, we've got our RIA, and at the RIA, they always have a national speaker. Almost every month, the guy brings in a national speaker, and that speaker is ultimately selling something, a course or a product. And I used to go to it all the time, and probably for about 5 or 6 years in a row, I went almost every month. And you'd see the same people month after month after month running to the back of the room, purchasing the new course. And the one course is about note buying, and the next course is about flipping, and the next course is about wholesaling, and the next course is about multifamily, and then commercial, and then, you know, so on. And the same group of people are running to the back, and it's, where's your focus? Like,
yeah,
I'm not against anybody buying a course, but I am against people buying a ton of courses and never implementing them. If you're going to buy a course, that, you know, $2,000 or whatever you spend on that, that should be motivation enough to say, all right, that's my focus now. If it doesn't work, like you said, you can always pivot, but make sure you spend ample amount of time on it. And ample amount of time doesn't mean just a month or two.
I completely agree. And it's one of the biggest things. It's just not jump off course. And I'm guilty of that all the time too. Just stay focused, stay on the driver's seat.
It's easy to do, because it's easy to, you know, you hear somebody talking about their success, and especially, you know, you've got your own podcast, you're talking to a lot of successful people, and you hear what they say, and you're like, ooh, that sounds really good.
Right. That's right.
And everybody's, yep. You know, podcasts are big, and people are listening to podcasts, and they're hearing a successful person like you. So now somebody's going to go, wow, man, I could lift some houses. That sounds like really profitable business. And I'm sure it is, but you know, if go focus on it, don't just,
there's a lot of learning curves. The lifting house area, there's it's taken decades for the little knowledge there. So,
I'm sure you'll learn something new all the time.
A lot easier things they can do to make a quick buck.
That's true. That's true. So what's a favorite book that you have read, or that you're maybe that you're reading right now that you really enjoy?
Oh, I just finished the Negotiator book. What was that called?
Yeah.
Chris
Voss.
Chris Voss.
Yes.
Incredible.
Never split the difference.
You haven't read it, read it. You don't have to, you're not out there. We're not looking for you to go out there and, you know, negotiate someone down from a building, but for everyday life, it's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah, he's a hostage negotiator. So yeah, right. You're not necessarily taking that, but you can apply it to really any business.
Yep, sure can.
Yeah, I did not read the book. I listened to it on Audible. I'd really enjoyed it. I think I've listened to it two times already. So sitting in the deer hunting stand, actually listening. To it
once. Nice.
So yeah. Talk to us, you got this podcast, you know, what do you do with the podcast? How can people listen to it, and tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. My wife and I started the podcast a little over a year ago. It's called the Real Estate Investing Foundation Podcast with Jason and Peely. You can go to our site, yerusiholdings.com, and you'll see the podcast page right there. You can find it on all the platforms, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher. It's great. It's really about helping basically investors find their foundation and really just either get into the business or ramp up their business by creating framework to grow their business. We've had a ton of awesome people on, including Todd, that have given us just a ton of wealth of information to really help investors get out of the stuck position and get into fifth gear.
Cool. Yeah. So check that out. Great podcast. Last question. What's your definition to financial freedom? Obtaining financial freedom.
You know, I was sitting with a guy who's super successful, builds generally, not, I don't know many people in New Jersey who are just crushing it. This guy builds 200, 300 unit apartment buildings here in New Jersey. And he had a good point, and he's mega successful, but he said it was somewhere along the line, I'd rather be rich in flesh instead of rich in money. And the point with that being, you know, an Italian phrase, is that just if you can be happy and fulfilled with your life and have the resource to do it, that would be financial freedom.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Rich in flesh. Rather be rich in flesh than rich in money. I love it. Cool. Cool. All right. Well, how do people get in touch with you?
Sure.
How can they reach you?
Go to our website, yerusiholdings.com. You can reach out to me directly at jason@yerusiholdings.com. That's YARUSIholdings.com.
And then what was your podcast website again?
The podcast.
Or how did they get you?
Yeah. You can go to REIFoundationPodcast.com.
Okay, cool. And that's on iTunes and all that kind of stuff. Correct. As well. So
yep. I know all the platforms.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you being on the show and taking time out of your day. And awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. Have a good rest of the day, man.
Thanks, Todd.
A special thanks to Jason Yerusi for coming on the show and taking his time out of the day to spend with us. And you know, great job that Jason and Peely, his wife, do on their podcast, the REI Foundations. Enjoy that podcast as well. So check that out, you know, iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Check that out as well. Just a fascinating episode. I had so much fun talking about the house lifting, something that really I have no experience with, but I have a lot of experience with construction. So it's just fascinating business and fascinating to hear about. So a fun episode for me to talk about. A couple things I took from this episode. First of all, you know, Jason, he talked about setting up what you're good at, figuring out what you're good at, doing that, and then finding others to fill in the rest, and how that's crucial to your success. And like he said, you think, oh, it's going to take me 3 seconds to do this, I might as well do it. And it ends up taking an hour, and you just wasted an hour of your day where you could have hired somebody else, had somebody else do it that is a part of your staff, and it maybe would have taken them, maybe it would have taken them 2 hours, but either way, it would have saved you a lot of time where you could actually be making money doing something else. So figure out what you're good at, make that what you do, and then find other people to fill in the rest. That's really important. The other thing I thought was great too, is he talked about taking action, and take action and make the mistakes and learn as you go. You don't always have to have it perfect before you take action. I think that's actually a big reason for failure for a lot of people, is they think, well, I got to keep on learning. Well, guess what? You're going to always keep on learning. I still learn. I've been doing this business for quite some time, and I still learn all the time. I talk to people that have more experience or even less experience than me, and I learn from them. So you're always going to keep on learning. So make sure you're taking action. Learn enough and then start going, because if you don't, you're just going to get stuck and you're never going to get started. The last, and he had a couple other great things, but the last thing I want to talk about is just your focus, and make sure you're focused on one thing, or maybe it's two things like he's got, that are his main focus, but make sure you're focused and you're not just bouncing around trying to do tons of different things and never getting traction on the one. It's important to get traction on one thing before you even think about starting another thing. And they've been doing this house lifting business for, I think he said 40 years. Maybe I'm misrepresenting it, but they've been doing it for a long time either way. And now he's into the multifamily, and he's focused on the multifamily. Jason and Peely aren't just running around doing multifamily, and then they're trying to do wholesaling. They're trying to do all this other stuff. They're focusing on that business. So make sure you focus and be all in on that focus. Anyways, appreciate Jason for coming on the show, spending time with us, taking time out of his day. If you enjoyed this podcast, you know, just go in and subscribe on iTunes. Share this out with your network. Share this out on Facebook or Twitter, wherever you're at, Instagram, wherever. Let people know about it and help us build this. And also for you, for the listeners, I'd really love to hear what you think and what you want out of this podcast. So if there's something that you say, man, I really wish this was talked about, or I really want to know about, you know, X, Y, or Z, just let us know. Go onto our Facebook page, go onto YouTube and make some comments and let us know what you want out of this podcast, because that's what this podcast is for. It's for you, the listeners. And I just want everybody to be getting the most amount out of this podcast as they possibly can. I'm Todd Dexhammer. I'm signing out. Make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.